Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael, continuing to read from the inside pages of the Midland Reporter-Telegram, published Thursday, September 9th. Art and Austin Bike Zoo slated for Septemberfest by J.C. Lewis. This year's Septemberfest will only be on Saturday, but it's full of fun for the entire family. Septemberfest 2021, Under the Desert Sky, will feature a live mural painting, live art demonstrations by local artists Kayla Barker and the Midland College Ceramics Department, a glass-blowing demonstration by Simon Warrench, artist booths, community performers, concessions, and more. Septemberfest has been going on for more than 50 years, marketing manager McKinley Loftley said. It is a Midland tradition and the biggest fundraiser for the Museum of the Southwest. The festival will also have performances by the Austin Bike Zoo, a dinosaur dome show, and patrons can view works by the Taos Society of Artists and Taos and Santa Fe Modernists in the Fertile Valley exhibition, which has been reworked. The Austin Bike Zoo is basically bikes made into art and animals, such as monarch butterflies, bats, eagles, armadillos, and more, Lofty said. Inside the museum, the Fertile Valley exhibit showcases a collection of work by the Taos Society of Artists. In Taos, artists including Joseph Henry Sharp, Ernest Blomensheen, Bert Phillips, E. Irving Kaus, made an art colony featuring traditional styles. The group applied that academic training received in Paris at the Académie Julien to capture the American Southwest. The idea of the exhibit is paralleling traditionalism and modernism, curator Matthew Ward said. Taos modernists also started to spring up simultaneously in the area, Ward said. Three galleries capture and contrast the artistic styles in Taos and Santa Fe during the 1920s. The exhibit also features a Georgia O'Keeffe lithograph on loan from the Ellen Noel Art Museum. There are also Navajo sand paintings and textiles on view during this time. Outside the museum, Dallas-based muralist Mary Pullman will complete a special mural during a live demonstration on Saturday. The mural incorporates iconography related to the museum and Midland. Mural highlights include a drill bit, Kentucky Derby trophies, planets for the planetarium, and more. The design is a bunch of abstract shapes mixed in with more figurative elements, she said. It gets more dense toward the middle, which will be where people can pose for photos, and the shapes expand toward the edges. There are abstract shapes, then different symbols that refer to different architecture at the museum or the planetarium. Just little Easter eggs for guests to see and then look around the campus to find. Pullman is a resident artist at the Cedars Union Arts Incubator in Dallas. She has completed large-scale artworks throughout the DFW area and beyond for clients such as Heineken, Frost Bank, Lyft, Walmart, and more. Throughout the week, campus visitors have had the opportunity to witness the mural in progress, and Septemberfest visitors will be able to watch Pullman paint firsthand. The mural will be complete by midday Saturday. Follow Pullman along on Instagram and TikTok at MARPOHL. Kinderfest activities include gravity bounces, an obstacle course, a nine-hole golf course, bungee jump, science experiments, games, crafts, and more. These activities will only be available to those who have purchased a Kinderfest wristband. We have jewelers, we have painters, and fiber artists coming from as far away as New Jersey and as close as Midland, Ward said. We have different styles for different tastes with different price points. Septemberfest will feature artists also Barker, Rebecca Dodge, Margaret Barth, Jody Molina, Danuela Ovcharov, Vladimir Ovcharov, Heather Bolin, Stephen Bunyard, Dean Byram, Rebecca Dodge, Michael Fish, Michael Gear, Heather Carlson, Rita Kirkman, Sean Klinskic, Mark Malia, Denise Malm, Roger Matthews, Ryan Minshew, Don Parks, Virginia Peacock, Martin Pauthier, Terrell Powell, Jamie Rude, Cheryl Roche, Bonnie Siebert, Donnie Spencer, Agnes Stelmach, Shandon Whitson, and Peter Wu. Featured artists will be Barker and Parks, who will be inside at a special booth. There will also be a backyard lawn concert by Weatherstone starting at 7 p.m. Festivities are scheduled to end at 9 p.m.
Hello, this is Cindy reading Health and Wellness from the MRT for Wednesday. Vaccination's a Game Changer for El Paso Hospital by Stuart Doreen. Does vaccination have an impact on hospital numbers? In El Paso, that answer is an emphatic yes. Vaccinations, according to health officials in El Paso, were a game changer. In fact, when vaccines became available, it was hard for the university medical center to keep up. High demand created long lines. Demand was so great that thousands of people from El Paso came to the Horseshoe in Midland for a vaccination. In April, Midland Health reported that more than 3,300 vaccinations total provided to residents of just four El Paso area zip codes. All totaled, vaccinations were provided in Midland for people from 22 different El Paso area zip codes. University Medical Center officials and others around the city eventually sought larger facilities. Drive-through vaccination efforts and mobilized vaccination stations to provide shots for those in need. UMC officials said Tuesday those 65 and older in El Paso are 88.6% fully vaccinated. Those 12 and older are 73.9% fully vaccinated, and 86.4% have received at least one shot. Those numbers are consistent with other border counties. In Presidio, the percentages are 92.64 and 82.7, respectively. In Webb County, where Laredo is located, the percentages are 85.97 and 83.45. In Midland, that average of those 65 and older that are fully vaccinated is 67.88, the lowest percentage of any larger population county in West Texas. The percentage of those 12-plus that are fully vaccinated inside Midland County, according to the state, is 42.3%. Historically, El Paso has been receptive to vaccines, said Miguel Rivera, UMC's infection control director. We started giving vaccinations, started seeing efficacy, and no one was getting sick. The higher vaccination percentages, Rivera said, is keeping people out of the hospital. The difference appears to be night and day. Officials said at the end of last year, prior to the availability of vaccines, El Paso had its issues with COVID infection and hospital beds being used for COVID patients. They described the entire hospital as a COVID unit, with peak numbers reaching 242. They also said they lost 918 people to COVID between October 11th and December 31st. That will shake a community, Rivera said. What officials are seeing following the July 4th holiday is different. The Delta variant is not overstressing the hospital's infrastructure. While Midland Memorial Hospital has had more than 120 COVID inpatients during the latest spike, University Medical Center, a public facility, has had no more than 30 inpatients on any day, is seeing days with zero COVID admissions, and numbers appear to have plateaued in August-September in the low to mid-20s. Rivera credits vaccines. He said in July the ratio of patients in UMC were three unvaccinated for every one that was vaccinated. That ratio increased to 5-1 in August and September. He also said no vaccinated patients have ended up in ICU or on a ventilator. Midland Health reported 109 COVID inpatients on Tuesday morning and basically as many waiting in the ER for a bed to become available as UMC has COVID inpatients in its hospital. Again, University Medical Center in El Paso experienced what Midland is currently going through, but that is in the past, according to officials, thanks to vaccination and COVID inpatient numbers that have other areas envious. Steam chiller infrastructure contribute to your comfort by Abraham Behil, Midland Health. The Midland Memorial Hospital engineering team is constantly looking for ways to improve the technology and infrastructure needed to provide a safe and comfortable environment for patients, staff, and visitors. Hospitals are very complex in their design as they must provide individual temperature and humidity control, and this is traditionally accomplished via heated and chilled water running above ceiling in every space. Controlling this water temperature can be extremely complicated and costly depending on the type of equipment installed and level of automation. The engineering department at MMH utilizes a central utility plant, or CUP, to provide thermal and electrical services to the hospital. That directly impacts patient care and comfort. MMH currently heats and chills water utilizing gas-fired steam boilers and conventional water-cooled chillers. This setup, while extremely common in healthcare facilities, does not allow for simultaneous heating and cooling by a single piece of equipment, whereas traditional water-cooled chiller system rejects heat via a cooling tower, heat pump chiller heaters capture the wasted heat and elevate its temperature with additional refrigerant compression. The result is a system that simultaneously produces heating water and chilled water with efficiency 600% greater than that of a traditional chiller-boiler arrangement. By upgrading and optimizing our steam chiller infrastructure and incorporating a heat pump chiller, the hospital will have the ability to efficiently control and maintain comfortable temperatures and humidity throughout the facility. Implementing these types of upgrades greatly improve patient comfort, consistency, and allow for cost savings. The forethought and hard work of the engineering departments is just one more behind-the-scenes departments that contribute to your overall experience at Midland Memorial Hospital. Abraham Behil is the Director of Engineering at Midland Memorial Hospital.
Hello, this is Michael, continuing with the health and wellness section from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, published Wednesday, September 8th. Getting a vaccine can save your life. By Kathy O'Neill, Bloomberg. The battle lines in the war on COVID-19 have been getting blurrier as infections surge and studies offer changing and sometimes conflicting data on exactly how much protection vaccines provide. Amid the fog, we mustn't lose sight of a crucial truth. Vaccines still work, and they're still a miracle. Not long ago, the goal seemed clear. If enough people achieved immunity through vaccination or infection, the pandemic would peter out for lack of targets. Now, that herd immunity seems even more distant. The Delta variant's enhanced transmissibility has raised the bar. The virus still roams freely in places with low vaccination rates. Isolation-weary people are heading out and taking their chances. As school restarts and new variants emerge, the situation is likely to get worse. Meanwhile, the most crucial data points about vaccines, how well they protect against hospitalization and death, are in flux. Early in the vaccination drive, the chances of an inoculated person dying of COVID-19 appeared to be about 1 in 1,000,000. Delta has probably driven that up somewhat, but a dearth of adequate information makes it difficult to say by how much. News stories tend to freak people out, by focusing on breakthrough cases in which people get COVID despite vaccines. Most official data cover the whole period since vaccinations began, so they obscure the more recent effect of Delta. Just looking at the share of vaccinated among the hospitalized and dead isn't great either. If everyone were vaccinated, it would be 100%. In the absence of good data, the message about vaccines keeps getting foggier. The information that filters through often ends up providing fodder for anti-vaxxers. What people hear is, don't bother getting vaccinated because you can still get COVID and even die. What's needed is a reporting system that would allow the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention to calculate COVID-related hospitalization and death rates among the vaccinated and the unvaccinated on a regular basis at the state and national level, with, say, weekly or even daily reporting on cases per 100,000 people. It would be much easier to see whether, and by how much, Delta and other emerging variants were actually wearing down the vaccine's most important protections. One recent study done in Los Angeles County, California, offers a glimpse of what such reporting might show. Looking at cases from May 1st through July 25th, when Delta was already circulating, it found that unvaccinated people were 29 times more likely than vaccinated people to end up in the hospital with COVID-19 infections. So vaccines are still effective, miraculously so. Getting inoculated can save your life and certainly justifies living more like normal. The message needs to get through. Fauci says COVID boosters likely to start with Pfizer. By Ian Fisher, Bloomberg. President Joe Biden's chief medical advisor said U.S. booster shots against COVID-19 are likely to start only with the vaccine by Pfizer Incorporated and BioNTech, while the Moderna Incorporated shot may be delayed. The bottom line is very likely at least part of the plan that will be implemented, but ultimately the entire plan will be, Anthony Fauci said Sunday on CBS's Face the Nation. Fauci's comments may lead to more clarity on the administration's stance after Biden ran into resistance by medical experts who advise U.S. regulators over what they view as political interference in the review process. While Biden has set a September 20th target for kicking off the booster campaign, safety and efficacy data require sign-off by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the Food and Drug Administration. Top medical officials, including CDC head Rochelle Walensky, warned the White House last week that regulators may only be able to act on the Pfizer shot, and possibly for just some groups of people, in the coming weeks, the New York Times has reported. Fauci said Moderna is getting their data together and may have submitted it by now. Any delay for Moderna would be a couple of weeks, if any, he said. The company said Friday it had completed its submission to U.S. regulators. Maryland Governor Larry Hogan, a Republican, criticized the Biden administration for mixed messaging. We need clear guidance on these booster shots because it undermines the credibility of it, Hogan said on NBC's Meet the Press. I guess they slipped and pre-leaked an announcement about booster shots with all three vaccines, and then they had to backtrack it and say they can only use Pfizer. Awaiting approval. White House Chief of Staff Ron Klain pushed back against criticism that the Biden administration is rushing booster shots ahead of the scientific evidence. CDC and FDA officials were involved in setting the week of September 20th target date for booster clearance, he said on CNN's State of the Union. We are ready to go as soon as the approval for the boosters comes from the FDA and from the CDC, Klain said. Fauci said plans for boosters involve using the same brand as the original vaccination, but that mix and match studies are being done to determine if people who got one shot as the primary vaccine could take another as the booster. Here's what we know about the Mu coronavirus variant by Adela Sullivan, Washington Post. A coronavirus variant known as Mu or B1621 was designated by the World Health Organization as a variant of interest earlier this week, and we will be monitored by the global health body as cases continue to emerge across parts of the world. It is the fifth variant of interest currently being monitored by the WHO. Where was it first detected, and where is it now? The variant was first detected in Colombia in January 2021, where cases continue to rise. It has since been identified in more than 39 countries, according to the WHO. Among them are the United States, South Korea, Japan, Ecuador, Canada, and parts of Europe. How widespread is Mu in the United States? About 2,000 Mu cases have been identified in the United States so far, according to the Global Initiative on Sharing All Influenza Data, GISAID, the largest database of novel coronavirus genome sequences in the world. Most cases have been recorded in California, Florida, Texas, and New York, among others. However, Mu is not an immediate threat right now within the United States. Top infectious disease expert Anthony S. Fauci told a press briefing on Thursday. He said that while the government was keeping a very close eye on it, the variant was not at all even close to being dominant, as the Delta variant remains the cause of over 99% of cases in the country. Mu has yet to be designated a variant of interest or concern by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, which did not immediately respond to a request for comment from the Washington Post. The California Department of Public Health said in a statement to the Post on Thursday that 348 cases associated with Mu had been reported in the state so far, and that it would continue to monitor all variants circulating in the state. Will my coronavirus vaccine work against Mu? It's unclear how much protection the vaccines offer against this variant. The Mu variant has a constellation of mutations that indicate potential properties of immune escape, the WHO said in a statement Tuesday, raising concerns that it may be more resistant to coronavirus vaccines than other variants. But this needs to be confirmed by further studies, it added. Fauci said that while laboratory data had shown that the Mu variant can evade certain antibodies, among them those induced by vaccine shots, there's currently a lack of clinical data and other research involving people that shows this. He underscored that in general, vaccines remain effective and the best protection against the coronavirus. Vaccine maker Pfizer told the Post in an email that it was studying the Mu variant and expected to share data soon with a peer-reviewed journal. To date, we are encouraged by both the real-world data and laboratory studies of the vaccine and see no evidence that the virus or circulating variants of concern regularly escape protection, said Pfizer spokesperson Kit Longley. Representatives from other coronavirus vaccine makers Moderna, Johnson & Johnson, and AstraZeneca have yet to reply to requests for comment. Is the Mu variant more transmissible? Paul Cardenas, a professor of infectious diseases and genomics at Universidad San Francisco de Quito in Ecuador, has studied Mu and told the Post that current evidence showed that it was likely more transmissible than the original coronavirus strain. Mu has been able to outcompete Gamma and Alpha in most parts of Ecuador and Colombia, he said. However, there was no sign yet that people should be more worried, Cardenas added. People should know that these variants emerge all the time, and it is important that they are characterized in order to be tracked, he said. What next? Mu is the fifth variant of interest being monitored by the WHO. It has not yet been moved up to the WHO's list of variants of concern, which currently includes the Delta variant ravaging the United States, along with the Alpha, Beta, and Gamma variants that are deemed more transmissible or virulent by the public health body. Most viruses change over time, and although some mutations have little to no impact on the virus's properties, others can change how it spreads, its severity, and the effectiveness of vaccines or other medications. For now, the WHO says more studies are needed to understand the characteristics of the Mu variant and that it will monitor how they interact, in particular, with the more common Delta variant.
Is numbness a sign of carpal tunnel syndrome? To your good health for Thursday. Dear Dr. Roach, for some years I have been experiencing pain and numbness in the first two fingers and thumb of both hands. I have mentioned it to my doctors and have gotten no answers. Lately, the same thing is starting on the last two fingers of my right hand. I have been diabetic for more than 20 years. Dr. Roach writes, the location in the hands is highly suggestive of carpal tunnel syndrome. Many people also notice that part of the ring finger may also have pain or numbness. Diabetes is a known risk factor for development of carpal tunnel syndrome. A physical exam can often make the diagnosis with reasonable accuracy. A test of the nerves, EMG and nerve conduction test, may be necessary if the diagnosis is uncertain or if surgery is considered. For mild cases, conservative treatment with anti-inflammatories, a wrist splint or an injection can be effective. If hand strength is affected, or if non-surgical treatment is ineffective, then surgery can be considered. Readers may write Dr. Keith Roach at P.O. Box 536475, Orlando, Florida, 32853-6475.
This is the Dear Abby column that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, September 9th. Parents hesitate to allow addict son to move back in. Dear Abby, my 24-year-old son is in rehab for the second time. We paid for the first, but we are not financing this one. He has moved in and out of our home since he was 18. We have tried written agreements, but he doesn't follow them. We let him move back in after his first day in rehab, despite the fact that he had stolen from us and had failed to get a job, etc. He not only didn't get a job, he also didn't help around the house or do any of the other things he had promised. 1 month later, he began using again. He claims to be taking rehab seriously this time and wants to move back in with us after he gets out. He says he now realizes he can't stay clean without following the 12 steps, including acknowledging a higher power, and without the support of his family. Over the past year, we spent several $1,000s helping him solve his problems. Our question is, will we be enabling him by letting him return home, or would it be best to help him transition to a halfway house? Signed, Supportive Parents. Dear supportive parents, you are caring parents, and I know this has been painful for you. Do not allow your son to move back in without first discussing it with the people at his rehabilitation center whose business it is to work with addicts. From my perspective, it would be better for your son and for you to have him pursue his sobriety at a halfway house. Dear Abby, my son is getting married in a few months. I always believed that if my child loved his partner, I would like him or her and be happy for them. Race, religion, sexual orientation, etc. would never have mattered to me. I found out this week that my future daughter-in-law totally rejects modern medicine. My son is a cystic fibrosis carrier. She refuses to be tested because, quote, no one in her family has ever had CF, unquote. Our family can say the same thing, but both of my sons and I are CF carriers. She plans home births with her mother as her midwife and believes vaccinations are harmful. My son supports none of this, but plans to marry her anyway. They want to get pregnant right away and eventually have 5 children. She's only 21 and intelligent, but she has been homeschooled and her father does not allow internet in their home. I feel her position on medicine is due to not being informed. Her religion does not forbid it. I am heartbroken. Is there anything I can do? Signed, Heartbroken in Michigan. Dear Heartbroken, not a lot, I'm sorry to say. You could point out to your son that he should insist he and his fiancée have genetic testing done before starting a family, which could avert a tragic and preventable problem. You could print out material from respected sources. The Cystic Fibrosis Foundation would be among them, but you cannot force the fiancée to accept it. Other than that, all you can do is cross your fingers and pray the young couple will catch a lucky break in a game of genetic roulette.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.